It is Tuesday, the 19th of June, and this is Kathy with information from the News Gazette for today. Starting with the front page, the fine print, Champaign-Urbana budgets. With budget talks commanding City Council's attention Monday night in Urbana and tonight in Champaign, the News Gazette sifted through pages and pages of financial estimates for a little compare and contrast. With collections coming from 27 hotels and motels, at least one more on the way, Champaign predicts $3,407,199 in hotel-motel tax revenue. Urbana, which also imposes a 7% tax on the receipts of hotel and motel room rentals, is counting on $935,000, up $8,500 from the previous year. Between them, the cities plan to generate $1.25 million from liquor licenses, $766,600 for Champaign and $484,000 for Urbana. Among other projected revenue streams, $18,986 for sanitary hauler licenses for Urbana and $181,800 for plumbing permits in Champaign. Police represent the largest personnel group in both cities, with Champaign, which has a population of 86,637, budgeting for 156.63 positions to 72.25 in Urbana, which has a population of 42,014. Champaign has twice as many patrol officers, 94 compared to 47, nearly triple the manpower devoted to investigations, 31.5 compared to 11, and more than three times the administrative personnel, 10 in Champaign and 3 in Urbana. Urbana's projections include $330,000 for parking tickets and $1.235 million in parking fees. The latter would be a year-over-year bump of about $85,000, the result of downtown hourly rates being hiked from 25 to 50 cents. They were last raised in 1986 for downtown streets and 1991 for lots. Champaign forecasts $3,013,092 coming in under the category of parking fines, fees, and meters. Champaign's budget predicts $80,250 for excess false alarm fire fines, plus another $37,000 for DUI fines, $25,150 for liquor violations, and $11,000 for animal control fines. Urbana's penalty projections include $148,500 for traffic citations, $21,000 for notice to appear fines, and $7,000 for dog control fines and fees. And that was put together by Jeff D'Alessio. This next article is about the Mahomet Aquifer. The water issue is getting worse, by Tracy Crane. More than a year has passed since Jody and Derek Eisenman discovered their well water was contaminated by a natural gas leak from an underground storage area. But for the Mahomet area couple, nothing has changed for the better. Actually, it's getting worse, Jody Eisenman said of the levels of natural gas in their well water at their home, about 5 miles north of Mahomet. They get bottled water delivered every Tuesday. Jody Eisenman said she believes the company responsible for their predicament, Chicago-based People's Gas, is not being held responsible. I just want to plead and beg that someone please do something, Eisenman told Mahomet Aquifer Task Force members during a meeting Monday at Mahomet Seymour High School's auditorium. She was assured by members that they are committed to making recommendations that will lead to change. At the meeting, officials with the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency and the Office of Oil and Gas Resource Management outlined their efforts on the issue, including 3D modeling by the IEPA of below-ground areas. That will help determine where the remaining leaked gas might be trapped, so relief wells can be installed to flare off the gas. And Mike Mankowski, director of the state's Oil and Gas Resource Management Office, outlined new federal rules regulating underground natural gas storage prompted by other leaks across the U.S. But he emphasized that Illinois needs its own more stringent regulations, ones that would allow more monitoring of the state's 1,186 underground gas storage wells, bring tougher enforcement measures, lead to more personnel inspecting oil and gas wells, and provide more funding to make all it happen. As things stand now, the maximum penalty for a violation is $1,000 a day, Mankowski explained. That's not a very big hammer, he said. The Mahomet Aquifer is a fantastic reserve here in Illinois, and we have to protect that. The task force of mostly local and state government officials, as well as experts from water-related organizations and agencies, is in the early stages of delivering groundwater protection recommendations to the state by year's end. But on Monday, members focused most of the meeting on the Peoples Gas situation, which began to unfold in late 2016, when some residents in the Mahomet area began noticing issues with their well water. Since then, Peoples Gas has acknowledged the leak at a natural gas well at Manlove Field, a gas storage area 4,000 feet underground, which contaminated private water wells. In October, the Illinois Attorney General's office responded by filing a lawsuit against Peoples Gas, and just last Wednesday, the Spiros law firm filed a civil suit in Champaign County Circuit Court on behalf of 17 plaintiffs from 6 homes, accusing Peoples Gas of negligence, consumer fraud, and battery, and seeking $50,000 in damages for each of the plaintiffs, plus punitive damages. Attorney Jim Spiros attended Monday's meeting and told the task force to question every bit of information it obtains from the company. "Don't trust the information you are getting," he said. Brian Manthe, Director of Communications for Peoples Gas, attended part of Monday's meeting. Afterwards, he emphasized the company's previous statement that the levels of methane in the private wells are not a health concern and that the water is safe for drinking and everyday use for bathing and cooking. He said the leak was discovered in late 2016, and within a month, the well was killed and the problem reported to local emergency and government agencies. But the company's timeline is disputed by task force member and state senator Chapin Rose, who have been working on legislation that would require companies operating underground natural gas storage facilities above sole source aquifers, like the Mahomet Aquifer, to make a series of notifications to emergency agencies, the government, and the public if a gas leak is detected. Manthe said the cause of the leak was corrosion in the well casing. He said Peoples Gas was in the process of conducting comprehensive testing on and inspections of all 153 natural gas wells in the area when the leak was discovered. The leaking well, which had not yet undergone the testing that can detect corrosion, was taken out of service. Currently, Manthe said 83 of the 153 wells have undergone that comprehensive, detailed inspection, and the rest will be done within 2 years. And from Top of the Morning by Jim Rosso. Did you play Little League Baseball in Champaign-Urbana? The CU Kiwanis Club hopes to see you at next week's 20 Years Under the Lights celebration at Zond Park, the site of the Twin City Tournament Championship Games since 1999. The menu on June 27th calls for complimentary hot dogs, chips and water thanks to Meyer Capel, 2 high-quality games starting at 6 p.m., broadcast by WDWS 1400 a.m., and a whole lot of reminiscing. More than 25,000 youngsters have played Little League and CU since games began in 1949. The Kiwanis Club's donation of $56,000 allowed the kids to play under the lights at Zond Park, a nifty facility on the corner of Windsor and Duncan in Champaign. Follow the tournament's progress on WDWS and NewsGazette.com, where podcasts of our broadcasts can be found. And some interesting history for our area. In 1918, following 6 months of training, the 267th and 268th Squadrons left Chanute Field to take part in the Great War. In 1968, Dr. L. Meyer Jones was named Dean of the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine. In 2003, a Chicago-based group looked to use the original Hoopston Town Hall at 200 East Penn as a Wiccan school and internet studio, as well as working ritual space. And in international history, today's highlight, on June 19, 1953, Julius Rosenberg, 35, and his wife Ethel, 37, convicted of conspiring to pass U.S. atomic secrets to the Soviet Union, were executed at Sing Sing Prison in Ossining, New York. On this date in 1775, George Washington was commissioned by the Continental Congress as Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army. In 1865, Union troops arrived in Galveston, Texas, with news that the Civil War was over and that all remaining slaves in Texas were free, an event celebrated to this day as Juneteenth. In 1938, four dozen people were killed when a railroad bridge in Montana collapsed, sending a train known as the Olympian hurtling into Custer Creek. In 1952, the U.S. Army Special Forces, the elite unit of fighters known as the Green Berets, was established at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. In 1964, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was approved by the U.S. Senate, 73-27, after surviving a lengthy filibuster. In 1978, the comic strip Garfield, created by Jim Davis, was first published in 41 newspapers. In 1999, author Stephen King was seriously injured when he was struck by a van driven by Brian Smith in North Lovell, Maine. In looking at the local section, Urbana High grad will spend 7 weeks in India, all expenses paid, while learning Hindi, by Vivish Anand. Traveling abroad is fun enough. Traveling abroad, all expenses paid, while living like a local and learning the local language is even better. Zena Dolan, an Urbana native, is on the receiving end of such an opportunity, courtesy of the federal government. It's part of the National Security Language Initiative for Youth Scholarship Program, introduced by the State Department in 2006 as a way to promote language learning and enhance cross-cultural understanding in American teens. Dolan, a recent high school graduate, said she learned about NSILY through a friend who had attended a Persian learning program in Tajikistan. From there, as a trilingual linguophile herself, the decision to participate in a language immersion program came easily, Dolan said. She applied in October and, after months of anticipation, learned of her acceptance in March. According to the State Department, Dolan is one of about 10 Central Illinois students accepted in the past 6 years. The 18-year-old will be traveling to the Millennium School in India to participate in an extensive Hindi learning program for 7 weeks. Dolan's motivation for learning Hindi, she said, stemmed from her desire to find out more about India's history, which was underrepresented in her education. And the best way to learn about that is through language, Dolan said. She added that learning Hindi will also be applicable to her aspirations in international relations. As a part of the scholarship, NSLIY provides room and board, but in quite an unconventional way. Instead of living in traditional dormitories, Dolan said, participants are matched with host families. She will be living with two host sisters, host parents, even host grandparents. Moreover, the bulk of Dolan's Indian experience will be spent inside a classroom, practicing Hindi, speaking, and listening. But for her, that won't be a regret. She said that her focus will be on learning about the people and the culture, and not so much on traveling. So visiting the Taj Mahal can wait. One of my main goals is to learn a lot more about India, she said. Not the part you hear about in the media, but just from talking to regular people. And learning Hindi will help me do that. Dolan will be accompanied by 17 other like-minded students from high schools across the country. They left Monday for Pune, India. Upon her return from India, Dolan will attend the University of Oregon to study history and international relations. Urbana Police Officer of the Year, Passion for Helping People. Winning the Urbana Police Department's John E. Lockard Officer of the Year Award was just one of the highlights of Bessie Alfonso's 2018. The other, giving birth to her first child. I worked until Friday and had him on a Monday, Alfonso said. It was quite a turnaround in life. I wanted to tie up loose ends and stuff before winding up on maternity leave, and he cooperated. A former cross-country gymnastics and track athlete at Mundelein High School, Alfonso's agility has come in handy in a profession she first took a serious interest in while in college. I can run after people, I can flip around and do a lot of things, she says. I can crawl in small places. I had to do that a couple of times. One time I had to climb through a trunk into the main portion of the car to get into a locked car. Nobody was in it, but they were locked out. The 29-year-old Alfonso, who is in her 8th year with UPD, sat down with staff writer Tim Mitchell for a wide-ranging conversation. 7 questions for Officer of the Year. As an officer who works with juveniles, what are some of the more common crimes you see? There's a lot of technology stuff going on regarding Facebook, regarding Snapchat. People will bully one another. There's a lot of bullying going on. They're sending of photos. Parents need to be a little bit more in the know and help manage. We have a hard time understanding all this because we didn't grow up with this. I'm 29 years old and was just at the cusp when things started coming out with Facebook and phones and stuff. It's hard for us to relate to what the young people are going through. In your 8 years on the job, what have been the biggest arrests you've been a part of? When I first started, there was a standoff in an apartment complex in the 900 block of Broadway. Someone was being held hostage in an apartment. We had to set up a perimeter. It was so cold. That night I realized I should always have gloves with me in the winter. Always have hand warmers. You never know. It's better to be overprepared than underprepared. It was the coldest night, and we were trying to make contact. We had to be tactical and look out for one another. Finally, the SWAT team came out there, and we finally left at 11 a.m. On Halloween 2016, there was a shooting on Grove Street. Two people were injured. Two brothers that were in the Fresh Start program were involved in that situation. They were at home and were able to be arrested. We interviewed them over at the station. Guns were found, and they pled guilty and were sent to prison. This past November, there was a call about an infant that had passed away. That was a tough call. We had to tell the parents. It was a very emotional and tough situation. It ended up that the infant died of a sickness. There was no foul play, but it was very heartbreaking. I maintained contact with the family, and we emailed back and forth to see how they were doing. I helped the family with several issues they were facing and referred their 3-year-old child to the Shop with the Cop program. As a detective, I like to help out with relationships. What does being UPD's juvenile detective entail? I investigate crimes involving juvenile victims and offenders. I am also in the crime scene unit and investigate adult crimes as assigned. My favorite memories include foot chases, getting a break in a case, making arrests, and helping victims. We have different school resource officers, but I work with juvenile offenders and juvenile victims as well as sex crime victims. I get along with kids. I feel like my stature sometimes gives me better rapport with them. I volunteered at Urbana Middle School when I first started as a cross-country coach, so I got to know some of the kids in the community, and I see them out and about. Some of them have graduated from high school already. It's good to see them out in the community. I work with Cunningham Children's Home, the Youth Assessment Center, the Children's Advocacy Center, and DCFS. We all really work well together. I enjoy what I'm doing and where I am. Tell us about your work with sex crimes. I investigate physical and sexual crimes against children. We learn about the crimes in a bunch of different ways. It can be through DCFS. It can be through friends. It can be from the victim. It can be from mandated reporters. There are all sorts of ways. What is your advice for a young person who has been the victim of sexual abuse? My advice is to have someone that you trust to talk to. Parents, teachers, law enforcement. Sometimes people aren't ready to say something. You shouldn't feel pressure to say anything if you don't want to. Whenever you feel comfortable and it's safe to do so, you can and should talk. How about your advice for girls and young women interested in pursuing law enforcement as a career? Girls and women who are interested in policing should go for it. You don't have to be the biggest or toughest person around. You need to have passion for helping people, but also be willing to confront dangerous situations. You're also involved in CU one-on-one mentoring. How rewarding an experience has that been? My mentee and I have been together for 7 years, third grade through now. Part of the program is that we meet with them every week in school, and it's been a long, fun time. We meet weekly during the school year and do fun activities over breaks, like going to a U of I basketball game, shopping, mini golf, and more. We've gone to Skateland, we've gone to batting cages. We have a good relationship. She wanted to get a job for the summer, so we talked about how to interview. We went over different skills and different things to talk about. We went out and got her an outfit for her interviews, too. She's a really good friend, and I care a lot about her. We have a lot of fun together, too. And the area update under the local and state news. 3 school boards okay SRO contact tracks from Bement. The Bement School Board has become the 3rd entity to approve a contract that will likely result in a Piatt County-wide school resource officer on board, possibly by this fall. The Piatt County Board and DeLand Weldon School Board have also approved the SRO, which would be a Piatt County Sheriff's Deputy assigned to the schools for 9 months of the year. Monticello and Cerro Gordo School Boards are expected to consider the contract, the cost of which would be shared by participating schools, on Wednesday. Bement Superintendent Sheila Greenwood told the school board that an SRO will be trained to offer help in several places. They want that person to obviously be a law enforcement officer, but they can also be a law-related counselor. They can instruct on law enforcement topics. They can go into driver's ed. They can go do bike safety, Greenwood said. They can come in and do self-defense with the staff. There's a lot of different things they can do. She said the officer will typically be in Mement one day per week during the school year, but that will not necessarily be the same day each week. Due to Monticello having higher enrollment in 5 buildings to cover, the SRO will be in that district 2 days per week and one day each in Cerro Gordo, Bement, and DeLand Weldon. The $67,153 annual cost will be split accordingly, with Monticello footing 40% and the other three 20% apiece. Since the Pike County Sheriff's Office will pay the officer during the summer months when the SRO is not stationed at local schools, the cost for Bement will be about $10,744 annually. The Sheriff's Department will be responsible for insurance and liability coverage. It's certainly a step in the right direction, said Greenwood, adding that Bement will be able to use tort levy funds to pay its portion. That was written by Steve Hoffman. And from the PBL School Board, District Using Automated Messages, Paxton. If you call the Paxton and Buckley Lotus School District in the near future, instead of a live person, you will hear an automated message on the receiving end with a list of options from which to choose. The change, approved unanimously by PBL school board members, is due to Superintendent Cliff McClure wanting to increase productivity among his staff. McClure said secretaries at all 5 of the district's offices, those at Clara Peterson Elementary, PBL Eastlawn, PBL Junior High, PBL High, and the unit office, received several incoming calls each day, only to immediately have to redirect those calls to another location. My unit office staff spends a lot of time redirecting calls to Dave Bachtold in maintenance or Dustin Frankie in technology, McClure said. I think Dustin receives more calls than any other person. Basically, we're answering calls and then punching an extension button to redirect the call. McClure also noted that school secretaries take several calls during the first 2 hours of the school day to record absences. PBL High School Principal Travis Dooley, who McClure said first requested the change, told board members that the sheer amount of calls can make it a balancing act at times. My secretaries could both be on the phone, and a person might be trying to buzz in at the front door, and it would be hard to balance that, and those situations happen pretty consistently, Dooley said. Once a person calls into the district, the first thing he or she would hear would be an automated voice. He or she would then be given a list of options from which to choose. Included in those options would be calls to Frankie's office and talking directly with an office secretary. Board Vice President Dave Dowling supported the proposal, but noted there will be some pushback from people who don't like automated calls. And that was written by Ross Brown. From the Courage Connection, Pajama and PB&J collection begins in July. From Champaign. Sometimes moms gather up their kids and flee violent homes, leaving all their possessions behind. What might offer some comfort in such a stressful time once they reach a safe place? Having a pair of pajamas to put on and a peanut butter and jelly sandwich to eat, according to Courage Connection, a local agent that serves victims of domestic violence. The agency is turning to the community to help provide those comfort items. Courage Connection will be collecting new pajamas in all sizes for kids and jars of peanut butter and jelly to stock its shelves. The items can be dropped off July 21st through the 29th at the agency's resale store called Connections at Lincoln Square in Urbana and at Busey Bank on West Main Street, also in Urbana. By Deborah Pressey. And now going to LOTA, grant awarded for new water tower. The Village Board learned during its monthly meeting that LOTA has been selected to receive a $500,000 federally funded grant for the construction of a new water tower. Village Engineer Tom Overmeyer said that LOTA is now in the pre-award period. A number of steps are required before the Village will be able to have the grant agreement finalized for Village President Carol Arsenault to sign. First, the Village will be required to provide an income survey and within the next 90 days an environmental review record. Arsenault or another board member will also be required to attend a grant administration workshop on July 19th in Springfield. Overmeyer said the grant will pay for most of the construction. The grant no longer covers engineering fees or grant administration costs, Overmeyer said. Also, the grant will not cover costs related to the demolition of the existing water tower, as that part of the project will be bid separately. You would build a new tower, put it online, then bring in a demolition contractor to tear down the old tower, Overmyer told the board. And that was written by Sandy Coffey. And from Village of Tolono, no more tree limbs or debris curbside. The village is asking Tolono residents to stop putting out large limbs and other tree debris for curbside pickup. Matt Graven from the Public Works Department reported to the board that the village may have to stop brush pickup, burn brush on and off, or pay the Landscape Recycling Center to take care of all the debris they are collecting from homes around Tolono. People are putting out more than yard waste, Graven said. Residents can't put out entire trees. If the pile is too big, we can't pick it up. We won't haul trees just to save residents money. Graven reminded the board that the landowner who allows the village to burn yard waste has asked them to vacate by fall. Let's send a thank you letter to the landowner, Trustee Gary Trulock said. And that was written by Mindy Bossi from the County Star. And from Paxton, City enters water testing contract. The City Council voted unanimously to enter into a contract for the testing of groundwater at the Paxton-owned landfill at a cost not to exceed $36,091. The testing was requested this spring by the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency as a requirement for the agency to certify the landfill as having completed its post-closure care period. The landfill has been closed since 1991. Yet the IEPA has repeatedly denied the city's application for the site to be certified for completion of post-closure care, and instead has been asking the city to do more monitoring. The agency said that they want the city to go out there and sample the groundwater monitoring wells. There's 8 wells out there. One more time, and then compare the water samples to the background levels from the last time they were sampled, City Engineer Mike Streff told the council. As long as the groundwater tested passes the monitoring parameters listed in the city's most recent IEPA permit for the landfill, the agency is expected to certify the landfill as having completed its post-closure care period, Streff said. If that happens, the city will no longer be required to monitor the landfill's groundwater. And the city could also move forward with a proposed sale of the landfill property, which is located near the southwest corner of the city-owned airport. Mayor Bill Ingold told the aldermen last week that the city was moving forward and making some progress on the sale of the airport to an Atlantic Ag Aviation Incorporated, a firm owned by David Hoopsha of Roper, North Carolina. And from Rantoul, Mayor announces new appointments. Mayor Chuck Smith announced his annual department head appointments and board, committee, and commission appointments. Department head appointments include Rick Snyder, the outgoing village administrator, Pat Chamberlain as comptroller, Danny Russell as ESDA director, Ken Waters as fire chief, Tony Brown as police chief, Greg Hazel as public works director, and Lou Humphrey as recreation superintendent. Other appointments include Citizens Advisory Committee Sarah Brown, Fire and Police Commissioner David Sherrick, Microloan Review Committee Herm Fogel and Connie Nelson, Police Pension Board, Gwen McMorris, Revolving Loan Fund, Review Committee, Fogel and Nelson, Scholarship Committee, Marguerite Carter, Denny Long, and Fogel, Storm Drainage Committee, Joe Bolser, John Rialli, and Ron Loy, and Tree Commission, J.D. Rossler, Lorraine, and Leonard Wurgis, and John Weichel. And that's about all we have time for in this first half. Please do stay tuned. We will be right back with the second half of the News Gazette for Tuesday, June the 19th.